I will say manifesting is far from a luxury. It's certainly not how I perceive it. It is an opportunity to change everything.
This is Reinvent Yourself with Dr. Tara Swart-Bieber. Conversations on neuroplasticity, the science that proves every brain, even your brain, can change, no matter your mindset or stage in life. Each episode, Dr. Tara leads compelling conversations with familiar voices to explore how anyone, even you, can reinvent yourself. And now, here's Dr. Tara.
Welcome to Reinvent Yourself. I'm Dr. Tara. Today's program is going to be extraordinary. Let me tell you why. We have the one and only West End chanteuse, diva, and powerhouse, Chanel Haynes. She has been manifesting her whole life. That is, creating into reality her deepest dreams and desires, like playing Tina Turner in London's West End, and even singing with the Rolling Stones. She told me that reading my book, The Source, and understanding the science behind manifestation really took her to the next level. Are you ready? Here we go. My guest today was discovered by Quincy Jones as a teenager and quickly became a founding member and lead singer of the gospel trio Trinity 5-7, selling 2.5 million albums and nominated for 2 Grammys. She has since shared the stage with the likes of Aretha Franklin, Beyoncé, and the Rolling Stones. Her most recent role was playing Tina Turner herself in London's West End in the musical Tina. Please welcome the lovely and gifted Chanel Haynes. Hi, Chanel.
Hi, Tara. Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
I think the way that you've come to be here is just so incredible to me. So we were introduced through a mutual friend, the lovely Beatrice Aden.
Yes.
And you offered me a ticket to come and see you in Tina, and we'll talk about why that didn't happen as we get into this episode. And I sent you a copy of my book, The Source. And
yes,
literally magic happened after that. So I just want to share your story with so many people because it's about one of my favorite topics, manifestation. But also, your story is so incredible, what's happened with manifestation. It really makes me feel like sometimes we need to leave a little room for magic because something so big can happen that you actually
yes,
couldn't have even like chosen or predicted it for yourself. So please tell everyone what's been going on with you recently and why The Source kind of fed into that.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And I can't express the joy that I'm feeling right now because in a way it validates I'm not crazy and that this thing that I couldn't even identify it and give it a name. There was no one around me as a child that said, oh, you're manifesting your future. Mm. You're different in the best way. Mm-hmm. I'm dyslexic, right? So the other part was, why am I not processing information and seeing the world the way most people see it? Why am I not, quote unquote, getting it? I was never supposed to fit in. And so I had to figure that out very early on. So I was forced to be a force as a child, and to figure out how do I navigate and then ultimately achieve my purpose, my desire, my passion, because everything else is an absolute waste of my time. And I knew that in junior high.
Wow.
Because my environment didn't serve me. Nothing around me said, this is your world and this is where you belong and this is where you will stay and this is where you will spend out your life. Nothing really spoke to me that way, not even a boyfriend. The boys weren't even attracted to me. So I instantly thought, well, maybe I'm not pretty. You know, why did God make me this way? So I started wearing, you know, sunglasses and things to hide my face because...
No.
At least if you hear my voice, you'll love my voice first. And then when you see my face, you'll push through somehow and say, you know what, though? But she's still really talented. All of my teenage years up until I was maybe 24, I remember I looked in the mirror and it was the first time I looked back at myself and thought that I was a pretty girl, that I was beautiful in that moment. But the same thing at that same moment when I saw that, that was a truth. I don't know how it came or why it came, but I knew it was true in that moment. The next thought was, all this time, I believed a lie. What a waste of my time. I will never waste years and years again of a lie. I have to know my truths. And that began my whole journey of manifesting.
Wow.
I refuse to compromise, you know. Okay, so the boys in my neighborhood don't think I'm pretty. There's some boys somewhere in the world that thinks I'm pretty. You know where they were? Manhattan Beach, California. Beach Boys. It was fascinating to physically take my body, place it in an environment that served me, and mm-hmm. see the whole world around me activate and respond to me. It was just that I was in the wrong environment. I had to remove my body and place it in a place where there was an abundance of what I desired. And when you place yourself in an environment where there is an abundance of what you desire, it's like salmon to a bear. They're just like, it's that season. It's coming.
Because I've introduced you about your career, but actually you've told me personally that you manifested your husband and your first son.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. My husband, when I was 16, I would listen to the Beach Boys, which again, in New Orleans, come on, New Orleans is blues, jazz, you know, gospel, very Southern. There are no Beach Boys in New Orleans. And, but I heard the Beach Boys Surfing USA song and they were singing about all these beaches. And then I'd look at videos and they're like, you know, they'd have the big giant bucket of ice with the crush, you know, orange crush, and they're all running into the ocean, you know, jumping and splashing. And I thought, I want that boy. I like those boys. Where are they? So I listened to the lyrics of the song because I'm a singer and I care about lyrics. And they name all these beaches in these California beaches. And I just said, well, I have to one day go to one of those beaches to find my beach boy. And at 27, around that time, Katrina happened, Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. In New Orleans, which forced everyone out of the city. And I had to decide, well, where am I going to go? So I went to California. And a few months in, I listened to the song again. And I said, oh, one of those beaches. So I chose Manhattan Beach. And I would just wake up in the morning and know that I was someone's fantasy. I was his dream girl. And so I had a little poodle named Hannah, apricot poodle, and I would dress her up, and then I would have on my little dress, and we'd walk the beach. And one morning, I woke up, same attitude. I am someone's fantasy, and I know my beach boy is somewhere around here. And I walked, and his car was driving past me as I was walking my little poodle. And our eyes locked for a second, and he drove past me, and I said, okay, I gotta stay cool. I can't look over my shoulder. Just keep looking straight ahead. Just hold it together. And then he made like the block, came around the block, parked his car a far distance so that it seemed like he was also taking a walk. And then he walked on the side of the street to me. And I thought, oh my God, that's the boy from the car, you know? And he walked up to me and he said, excuse me, who are you and where are you from? Those were his first words to me. And I remember thinking it was as if I was an alien that landed on Earth. You know, he was just like, what is happening? You know? And I said, well, I'm so literal at the moment. My name is Chanel and I'm from New Orleans. And long story short, his fantasy was to one day marry a Black woman from the South of America.
Wow. So
he wanted a Southern Black woman as his wife. And I wanted a beach boy with a six-pack and green eyes. And we both, if you knew our families, We both took our own path, kind of went against the norm. Mm-hmm. And we believe and know that we found each other on that path of, you know, it's just this mystical, unusual, random, in the moment path where we found each other, and both of our deepest desires were met. And so now I can see a smoking hot guy walking down the street any day, and I'm like, he's nice, but he's no beach boy from Manhattan Beach with us. You know what I mean? I have my dream and he has his. So that was amazing.
It's actually neuroplasticity, what you both did, because you are a preacher's daughter, right? So you...
Yes.
Yeah. You were brought up in that way, in that area, and you took a very different path, as did Greg.
Yes. Greg's family is, you know, very... I mean, their zip code is a zip code of Bruce Springsteen. Let's put it that way. And it's, you know, USA and beaches and all those things. And it was very beautiful and amazing. And my culture, same thing. But we desired something so specific. And I find the more detail, the more specific you are about your desires, the more that the entire universe and all that God has created can answer you. Mm-hmm. But when you're vague, just like in an interview, if you're vague, I don't know what you want. And so I can't give you what you want because it's too vague. And your intentions and your desires, it's the same thing with the whole universe. If you say, oh, well, I want to marry a man. Okay. That's all you're going to give me? Like, can you be more specific? Mm-hmm. And I think people are afraid to be specific for fear of being disappointed.
Yeah, I agree.
And fear and love cannot coexist. They can't live in the same space. So you either have to, either you're making choices and decisions from a place of fear, or you're making them from a place of love and knowing and boldness. You have to be bold about it. You don't have to tell people if you don't want to. That's not what bold is. You know, it's just you fully own what your intentions are.
And it's the self-belief.
It's the
self-belief. And like immediately as a neuroscientist, I'm thinking fear is cortisol and love is oxytocin. So your brain is being flooded with a completely different hormone whilst you're creating the details of the intention and manifesting it. So can you give us some other examples of where you've been so specific in what you've wanted to manifest?
So my top three, just to, you know, one was I really wanted to find the man of my dreams, someone who was crazy about me, not some version of love. I wanted to be everything he ever dreamed. That's what I wanted in a husband. Mm-hmm. Second, I knew and had the greatest desire to give birth to a son. Mm-hmm. One, I wanted to give birth and I knew that it would be a son. That's probably the biggest thing I've manifested in my life, because that is absolutely something in your mind, all the things, but there's so many other things that has to happen for that to come together. The third thing was to truly honor and one day, you know, serve the legend, Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. When I first saw the film, in 94, I was a teenager and I said, you know, if they did a film on her, they have to do a show. And when they do, I will play Tina Turner. And I was 19 or 18, somewhere around there, when I made that decision in my mind. And I'm now 45. So I got the job at 44. I believe I was 44. So it took me all that time to truly be prepared. I was prepared. I was ready. I told my husband, I told everybody, I said, if I can figure out what room they're holding auditions, I don't know where in the world they're doing this. I don't know how, where it is, but if I get in there and the right people, the people who make the decision, see and hear me, I will be playing that role. And that's exactly what happened.
Wow.
The third, or the fourth, I think, mm-hmm. which is most recent, it's in a category of its own, different from how I've manifested things in my past.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it. I was very specific about the other things and gave every inch and piece of detail and attention to manifesting it. But the one thing that I never really quite shared on a global scale and told, you know, a lot of people was my desire to be a rock star. Like, mm-hmm. it just sounds so, yeah, who doesn't want to sing rock and roll and be a rock star, you know? And I just thought to myself, you know, following Tina's formula, because I know she has a formula.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's not just her voice. It's not just what everyone's looking at in terms of her work, but it's the way she lived her life and the entire formula of it. And I studied her formula.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, and I was able to see how when you've done that kind of work on yourself, those like massive things, like out of bigger thoughts than you could ever think for yourself, they find you because you have actually entered a different zone, a different place. In some way, you become somewhat of a master of manifesting. So now you know how to do it. But then there's this other level that happened that I didn't expect. But I do notice that it happened once I started reading your book. there was this new, fresh awareness. For example, and I think this really helped serve me. When I finally understood, when I knew and I saw the actual like shapes of the neurons, I never knew what they even looked like or what they were or anything like that. You just manifest, right? Because you're a child that's just forced to figure it out. So my whole thought was I just figured things out. But you gave me definition. You gave me understanding. You made it real and tangible and through your book. And when I saw the shape, I actually, that's when I closed the book because I have to pause. I'm like, I can't go beyond. I need a break and really process this because those neurons, they've been my friends and I love them and they have served me my whole life. And, you know, I may be saying it wrong, but axon and then axon terminate and dendrite. I'm saying the words wrong.
You're not.
But giving, they have names to the parts of their existence and that they all work together to serve me. They love me. I love them. Like, it's a way that I fell in love with myself again. Because I was the little girl. I was a child saying, what is wrong with me? But my neurons were like, come on, girl. You know, you have no idea what we can do.
Wow.
And they've been here all along. And then I think there was this power. And once I had a shape, you know, and an idea of like how they work, and I had an appreciation for my mind and saw it as beautiful. And it's a tremendous gift that's been given to, you know, someone like me and so many artists and entertainers that's never opened a book to understand neuroscience and the way the mind works. And it's just, you made it so easy and delicious to take in.
And, you know, I wrote the book because I wanted it to be accessible to all sorts of different people that I may never get the opportunity to meet. And just for our listeners, I just want to give a little definition of manifestation, which is basically when you set a goal or you create a vision and then you make that happen in reality, or it becomes true in reality. And we haven't even said the example, the incredible example that we're talking about now, your fourth one, which is that the way you described it to me, but please tell the full story, is that you studied Tina Turner's formula and you saw that she had worked with the likes of David Bowie and the Rolling Stones.
Yes.
And you started to think of, okay, who in my time is the equivalent of those, what we call yes. the original gangsters of rock yes. and roll. And then what happened?
Yes. So I was doing my normal approach. How do I make this real for me? How do I also work with the number one rock and roll bands? Because mm-hmm. this formula is so amazing. And so I was looking in, I don't want to really say their names, but some of my favorite rock bands. Mm-hmm. And that was a desire in my heart. But then I must remind you that for a year playing Tina Turner, every night that I do this show, I mention Mick Jagger's name twice every night. And I'm channeling. I am channeling her experience. And there's this line where I'm sitting in my chair and there's a knock on the door and I'm in my dressing room and my manager says, okay, this could either be Grace Jones, Mick Jagger, or David Bowie. And my response to him is this really happening? And that's just one. The other line that I, every night that I said was to my manager, Rhonda, I said, mm-hmm. do you remember when I told you that I wanted to be like Mick Jagger and David Bowie and you said that I could fill those stadiums just like them? You're gonna have to let me try this.
Yeah.
And there was this longing. I meant every word because this was my person, Tina, you know?
Yeah.
So next thing I know, the show is over. Run up by, like, I think it was a Saturday night. And I go to the Delaney, my favorite restaurant across the street. Mm. And I sit there and I can't say his name because I have to protect him. Because I don't like getting anybody in trouble. If you want to be in trouble, I'm your girl. You can, you know, but if you don't want to, I'll protect you as well. But he came over to me and he said, Chanel, I need you right now. Can you find any footage of you doing Tina that I can send to Mick Jagger? He wants it and he needs it within an hour.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm sitting there going, what? And so we find the footage. I send it out. I wake up the next morning and my email is filled with emails from every department, making sure that every box is checked, from flight arrangements to the doctor to make sure I'm healthy, wigs, costumes, road manager. I mean, the list goes on and on. And this was a pivotal moment for me because, first of all, I had never sang the song before. I didn't even know what they wanted. I just said, yes, I'll do it.
Yeah.
It's a yes.
Yes.
And
it's a yes.
I will find it. I had never sang the song, but one of the things I read in your book, it's the, you know, again, just creating these grooves. It's like, I just need to know that I can do it. I need to hear my own self hit those notes because it's out of my range. Mm. And I certainly don't want to get in front of all these people and my voice crack.
Yeah.
But all I need to know is if I can do it once, I can do it a million times. I just need to hear myself do it once. And so I sang it. I hit the notes one time. And then the next day, it was time for me to do a full rehearsal of the song with Mick Jagger 3 inches away from my face. And it's just time to let it rip. Just go. And I'm screaming, shot away, shot away, shot away. Just going crazy because I'm like, you got to kind of be out of your mind to do these kind of things, you know? And there's this little smile on his face like, wow, this girl is kind of crazy. She's really doing this, you know? It's amazing. And the next time I sang it was in front of 60,000 people. We couldn't rehearse on the stage because it had rained earlier that day. So everything that was done between Mick and I was raw, vulnerable, trusting each other, and just the sky. There's no ceiling. It's a stadium. It's just wide open. So you see stars, and then you hear the sound of the people roaring, and it's all going into your body. Mm. And I was vibrating, and it was the sound of nature, the sound of a jungle. I'll never, ever forget the sound. The closest I could describe is when I just recently was in Greece, and at midnight, listening to the ocean, the waves crashing. That's, you know how that's it's the only thing you can hear. That's what it sounded like, wah, wah. Like I'm doing a terrible job.
But you sent me some. You sent me some footage from behind backstage of
yes,
the crowd.
Yes, you heard
it.
It
was very primal. I agree with you.
Primal.
But
yes.
Also, now that you've mentioned the neurons, and there's 100 billion neurons in the brain, I'm also getting that analogy. It's like those people were like connecting up like neurons, which is the basis of neuroplasticity.
Oh my God. Don't do this to me. So melting in front of this microphone.
Whilst you melt, I just want to go back and mention a couple of things before we go to break, because you know, obviously we've talked about this before, and you've read the book, and you know about the process of the 4-step process of neuroplasticity. But what I don't write about so often or speak about is that repetition and emotional intensity, they have a huge amplifying effect on neuroplasticity, which underpins manifestation. So the fact that you were talking about Mick Jagger twice a night, 4 times a week for a year, that can't be a coincidence.
No way. That's why it was an easy yes. It felt familiar. It was clear. This is my time. I've done all the work. I've felt it in my body because I'm acting. I'm channeling this experience. And this anticipation of Mick knocking at my door. And then it actually happened.
Wow.
The call comes in the form of a knock, or knock in the form of a call, because I'm dyslexic, you know which way it should go. And that moment happened. Even when the whole world or the people closest to you don't agree, don't feel that this is appropriate for whatever their reasons are, it's absolutely irrelevant. When I tell you negative zero effect, negative zero effect, you've never had the power. You've never had the space or the room to determine my future. I've never given that power to you. And I don't know why you're so surprised all of a sudden that I've made the decision that I've made. What I will do is inform the people around me that I value, that I respect, or that I've made some kind of commitment to. I will inform you so that you can do what you need to prepare, but it will not determine my plans. But I do care enough to give you, you know, get ready. The hurricane is coming. You should start, you know, putting up the boards on the windows, whatever it is to prepare. But I will give you that heads up, but I will never give my power away. I did that when I was a girl. I wanted to fit in. You want to be accepted. You want to be smart and pretty and funny and all the things. But then the way it lined up for me, I was forced. I couldn't do any of those things. So I was forced to be the force that I am.
I really want to go into the fallout of what happened after this amazing opportunity, because that felt like a bad thing before you realized it was a good thing. But we're just going to go into a quick break, because it's quite an intense story. So incredible. Like, even though I know the story, it's just kind of bowled me over some of the new details that I've just heard. So we'll go for a quick break and we'll be back shortly.
You are listening to Reinvent Yourself with Dr. Tara. We'll be right back. Reinvent Yourself with Dr. Tara is proudly supported by Emotional Well-Being by Raffles Hotels and Resorts. True luxury is not just about what you do. It's about how we make you feel.
This is Dr. Tara, and if I'm going to stay at a hotel, it needs to be rejuvenating. I travel a lot, and even a single night away from home can be exhausting. I need a place to rest my head that is deeply invested in creating a destination designed for my well-being. That is why my best night's sleep away from home is when I stay at a Raffles hotel. Raffles takes a holistic approach to well-being, where guests are intuitively guided through thoughtfully curated experiences, spaces, and rituals, bringing a sense of wellness. Raffles is intentional when it comes to design for harmony and nutrition for pleasure, carefully curating a ritual program with a series of collaborators. The end result is the breath of fresh oxygen you need when away, whether for business or escape. This focus on emotional well-being is precisely what makes Raffles Hotels and Resorts a perfect partner to my podcast, as their focus and desire is for you to live your very best life.
For more information on Raffles Hotels and Resorts, including details about their curated well-being programs, simply visit raffles.com today. That's raffles.com. Raffles, true luxury is not just about what you do, it's about how we make you feel. And now, back to the conversation.
So, Chanel, we were at the point where you were telling us about this incredible experience of actually singing with Mick Jagger. Mm-hmm. And then you started to speak about not giving your power away. I obviously know the story, but I want people to understand what that was about. And from my point of view, we have this mutual friend. I was in the States at the time,
Yes. Which
is why I was going to miss your final performance as Tina. Yes. But then that final performance didn't happen. That opportunity was taken away from you. And I was hearing about this remotely and we didn't get to speak till I got back. So talk us through what happened and also like emotionally what that journey was like for you and, you know, how you came to actually realizing that it was potentially part of your manifestation and your future.
Yes. You know, when you've wanted something for so long, you see it, you know, sort of like in your mind, right? But you don't necessarily know exactly how it will feel when the moment happens. You think you know how it will all line up, but what you're thinking and what you're feeling and what you're experiencing can be so many different things. And here it is. I am finally singing with the gods of rock and roll. There is no bigger rock band. If I'm not a rock star at this point, I never will be. But if the king calls you, I think you're royal, okay? This moment happens. I'm so happy and so elated. And hours later, I get two emails. The first email is from the entity that says, you basically are out of order and you're under this investigation. And so you're suspended. Mm-hmm. Therefore, your final shows, you will not be doing those shows. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed in the building. And there are security personnel that are in place to make sure that you do not even try to enter this. I'm paraphrasing, but this is the gist mm-hmm. of the email. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows if you're in entertainment at all, especially on Broadway or West End, your final weeks, this is the window of time where you're bringing in all of your possible potential, you know, future opportunities, agents, whoever, to come in to see you. So this is precious commodity to the performer. Not necessarily to the producers or whoever, because long as they have a show and they make the money, they're fine. When I got that email and I knew it was excessive, it's one thing for you to say, okay, you're under investigation, you can't do the show. That's already ridiculous because I made sure that you had a show by contacting my backup, one of my four backups. You can mm-hmm. pick one. Mm-hmm. To ensure that you get your money, you get your show, you're mm-hmm. fine. but you just want to take away me doing the show, okay, to like give me a, you know, pat on the wrist. And then, but that's one thing. But then to say, and you're not allowed into the building. So with that, that is as if I am a stranger. You're not allowed here. You're an outcast. This is what my brain is saying. Okay.
Yeah, it's like you're no longer part of the family and
you're no, yes.
You don't get closure.
Yes. In my mind, a cruel twist to my final moments of something that I have worked so hard. I will be bold in this moment to say they've had excellent, talented, beautiful, amazing girls to play Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. No one channeled Tina the way I channeled Tina. No one gave 20 years of their life processing, downloading, studying, perfecting the nuances of Tina Turner but me. The only one who is a mother when I'm on stage channeling, protecting my child from the assaults of Ike Turner. So all these moments were so raw and real, and I had to tap into those places. I have an 8-year-old son, and in the show, there is an 8-year-old boy that's crying and screaming, "Mommy, please help me," you know, basically. So they knew, you, everyone knows this. They know the what it costs me emotionally, mentally, physically to do this. And so to be said, you can't enter the building, that means I can't say goodbye to my friends of 2 years. The people I've you know, cried with, laughed with, dreamed with, all the things. So that was, to say the least, very disappointing. But as I said in the article in the Rolling Stone magazine, it's disappointing, but it's not defining. You don't define me. It's a moment. It's disappointing. And like the other disappointments in my life, I will override it. I do allow myself to feel the weight of it. I don't ignore it. I let myself feel it. I don't let it define me. And so that really, and so especially with the children, I love these kids. Between that and my friend who was the person to give me the actual downloads of what it's like to be a physically abused woman in entertainment. Because that's the only thing of the Tina story, of Tina's story that I have not experienced is physical abuse. And I wanted her to see her work, her story in my body on that stage. That meant a lot to me. And for that to be taken away from her, from us, that really upset me. But, you know, I said, I think the best way to handle this is for it not to just be my thing to process and channel. I think everyone should know why I won't be performing that day. And it really was just a knowing. I said, this is how it should be. If you're bold enough to tell me that I can't come into the building that I just made you millions of dollars, I can't come in. Okay. So now we need everyone to know why I cannot come in and do what I love with the people that I love. Because I came from a pure place. I posted it. And within hours, Rolling Stone magazine said, we want to do a story.
Yeah.
If you've done any research, you looked at the basics, you'll know that you should not have tried to rip my heart out like that. I gave you a year of me not singing goodnight to my own children. I sing my boys to sleep every night of their life. And for the year I played Tina, that... Yes, I wrote a song for Xander when I gave birth to him, on the spot. And I sang it to him every night until I had the show. And, you know, of course, I get home at 11:30. And, you know, I can't get that year back of singing his, you know, their little lullaby to them. And so, yeah, that was really disappointing.
I know that you did, and I know the physical toll on you as well as everything else is still there, actually. But when we talked, I sort of said, well, you know, now that you've sung with the Rolling Stones, it's like such a pinnacle. It's kind of, and I know, yes. I do understand that you wanted to see all those people again. And I personally know people that had tickets and then didn't get to see the show. But
yes, I knew that this moment would serve me. Because I've already had disappointing / devastating hurtful moments before. And I think it's Khalil Gibran, one of my favorite philosophers. You know, he's helped me in some of the darkest times of my life with The Prophet. The Prophet is like my favorite.
I love it, yeah.
And I just knew that, oh, you know, when sorrow is sleeping, joy is awake. When joy is awake, sorrow is sleeping. Like it's, and so this was sorrow right now, but when it goes, it'll settle down. The joy that I had and the connection that I have experienced with the Rolling Stones, who are 60 years of legendary work and admiration from around the world, if they can see my greatness, I have no time. I don't have time to be devastated by an individual or someone or a mind that is so minimal.
Well, we talked about hanging out with people of a higher vibration, didn't we? And I basically said, like, you've ascended to a different level now. And so it really made me think when you told me the story, like, how conscious we need to be of who we spend our time with. Because if people are small-minded or mean or bitter or jealous, then, you know, that does have an impact on you through hormones and emotions and things.
It does.
I think we've missed a few parts of the story that I really want to highlight. Because didn't Keith ask you for your interpretation of his lyrics?
Tell us
about that.
He did. I walked into his dressing room, which there's a gigantic picture of his person, Chuck Berry. And because I'm so all about authenticity, I wanted the energy to be right and the presentation of this song to be right. And so two things happened. One, I got to speak with Mary, who originally recorded the song with the Stones in 69, Mary Clayton. And she said, Chanel, I want you to sing this song the way it's meant to be, from your heart, from your way. Not don't sing it like I do. Sing it your way. Which I swear, the first thing I thought when she was saying these things to me was the source. Because in that moment, it was the source. The DNA, the like truth telling me, you have my full permission to do it your way, she said, because the church is in you. So she's a church girl. I'm a church girl. And remember, I'm telling you about my childhood. Like, I don't fit in. You know, I'm this church girl and I'm not. And I took the church. She said, you take it up there and you do it your way. So I had that going in my mind. Then I go into Keith's dressing room and it's this just beautiful, beautiful moment. And I humbly ask him, is there anything at all that you might want to share with me that I can bring true justice and beauty to this, you know, incredible song that you've written? And he basically said to me, I want you to tell me, after you've sang the song, what the song means to you. And he was, there was more words in between, but that's the essence of what he said. And I knew right away, this man is a true master, because he was confident enough and he knew that the context, the content of this song is a living, breathing organism. It is alive. And whoever sing it or perform it, it's going to take on its own shape with that person. I didn't know that. I thought I was just going to do a great job and sing the song really well and, you know, execute it, you know, as an entertainer. But when I took what the two of them downloaded into me, into my mind, I took that information. Mind you, I only sang the song twice before doing it. So I go up, and soon as the lyrics come out, right a shot away. I thought, oh my God. My hand was trembling. I could barely hold the mic because every single moment that I was taken advantage of and dreams that were smothered or killed mm-hmm. or murdered, my ideas of songs that I'd written raped, taken away and given to other producers, and they made millions off of my creation. And then, of course, what I was experiencing silently, you take my gift and you benefit and you thrive and you build your homes and you buy your boats and you travel the world. And then you tell me I'm not allowed in the building. When I hit those notes, it hit every single soul in that stadium, including the souls on that stage. And that's the power that we all have. When you open your mouth and you are authentic and you are true and unrelenting, bold, fearless, pure place of love, it will be felt and it will reach the world. And that is what your book has done and what is doing, because I was channeling the things I put into practice, what I'd learned and processed. Again, there were some things that I sort of figured out, but I couldn't identify what was happening. And now, and there's a whole nother level to once you have an understanding of what you're doing and how and why. The force behind that, it's magic. And so that really was a powerful moment to be able to have the knowledge that I have everything I need. It's already in my body. All of us, we have everything we need. It's already there. The pain, it works for me. The lies, you work for me. I don't work for you. I'm not running after you, trying to put out lies, put out fires. I am the fire.
I love that. I mean,
I burn.
You did say to me, and you've explained that you had a felt sense of manifesting since you were a child. You knew that your voice was your gift, and that's what you had to go out there and share with the world. Yeah. And that the understanding of the science was a real game changer for you. And obviously this peak experience with the Rolling Stones, I'd love to take some credit for it. It happened shortly after you finished reading my book, but I can't say those things.
Honestly, and I'm not kidding, because these gentlemen, they've seen a lot, they've experienced a lot, and I cannot wait to sit at their feet to learn, to absorb from them. And the moment will come that they will ask me questions and they will ask me the how and the whys, because it's a reason I'm there, because I am a peer. You don't get on a stage with the kings of rock and roll if you're not a peer. And so when they ask me, and if I can go back a little bit, you talked about visualization, and that was one of the things that I hadn't really exercised a lot. So, for example, every morning now, before I get out of the bed, every morning since I've done that show, I don't even open my eyes. I have a whole story where I have a conversation with Mick or with Keith or with Ronnie. And I know the dress that I'm going to wear. I've already designed it in my mind, my first dress when I'm back on stage with them. I see the whole thing before I start my day.
Okay.
So that's a big practice that I do every morning. And Ronnie is a big manifester in my research, because he said he always knew. He would say, one day I'm going to be in the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
I didn't even know this because, you know, just in my research, I'm obsessed with understanding the realm of where I'm entering. And I said, whoa, he's a manifester. And what I want to tell them, and I'm serious, this is something Keith Richards is already doing that is in page 93/94 of your book. Mm-hmm. It's all about this, you know, I can create fresh sequences, like, you know, what happened? Where are you? How do I feel? Is this a happy or difficult situation? And you're firing up these fresh neurons. You're manifesting. Mm-hmm. So with my research with Keith, again, I think they're like me, like a lot of artists. We don't know what the hell is going on. We just do it. We just know we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Mick, same thing. These guys are 79, 80 years old. You cannot tell them that they're old. You cannot tell them that they're dated, that they're out of sync with now. You would be the fool, because we all know their history with all the drugs and the drinking and the this and the that and all that. That, according to them, they should have been gone a long time ago. Mm. But their mind, they're still the boys that started rock and roll. They didn't become old men. They never became old men.
There's so many things that you said that are actually sparking new ideas in my mind, but also confirming some of the neuroscience. I'd like to summarize them now before we go into the break, but then maybe we can unpick some of them in the next section. One of the things you said was that because the song was so out of your range, you could have potentially damaged your vocal cords if you practiced too much. So,
yes.
But you, knowing that if I've done it once, I can do it again. Yes. And in neuroscience, we do say, find examples of things that you've done before so that your brain knows you can do it. And if you haven't done it yourself, find a person like you that's achieved that thing that you want to achieve, because then you know it's possible.
Yes. It is possible.
Yeah.
All it takes is one time.
You had to hear yourself sing that note one time.
Yes.
And sometimes, even if it's not real, like you actually singing that note, for people who visualize something in advance, like an interview or a sporting event or whatever, then it, to the brain, it's not completely new, because something completely new is a threat to the brain.
Right.
But I also loved what, and this isn't neuroscience, but I think this is such a good life lesson for people, which is when you've had disappointments or devastations, that you don't let it define you. So you don't stay stuck in the fear and the cortisol. You move yourself back to love as quickly as possible so that you can keep manifesting, keep reinventing yourself. Because when you're stuck in that fear state, you can't manifest or successfully visualize.
No.
Although I'm big on visualization and vision boards, or what I call action boards, you've twice now said that, you know, you were in your role as Tina mentioning Mick Jagger twice a night, four times a week, as when you were performing. Yes. Was it Ronnie that you said would say out loud, I'm going to be in the Rolling Stones?
Yes.
So I'm actually going to do a bit of an experiment myself and try to do more speaking out loud rather than just the visualization that I do. Because when you speak out loud, you're actually using three parts of your brain.
Yes,
you're using
the
part of your brain that articulates speech. You're using the part of your brain that hears the spoken word, and you're using the part of your brain that interprets, you know, what it's heard. So in a way, it's triple the effect on your brain. You're speaking it, you're hearing it, you're interpreting. You could also write it down and then you're reading it as well. When we come back from the break, I'd love to talk about the power of the mind over the body, because you've actually, in a way, you've hinted that, you know, these gods of rock and roll, they're not even aging normally. So I really want to dig into that.
Okay.
We'll go for a quick break and then, yeah, let's see what we come up with around that, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people interested in that.
You're listening to Reinvent Yourself with Dr. Tara. We'll be right back. Dr. Tara's revolutionary take on neuroplasticity is having a profound impact on thousands and thousands of listeners and readers worldwide. If you are one of the many who are truly looking to reinvent yourself, but you don't know where to start, look no further than the MIT Executive Education Program. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology offers courses, both in person and online, that can give you a jumpstart on true transformation. In fact, Dr. Tara offers a 6-week online MIT course called Neuroscience for Business, a program she designed specifically for leaders. It will challenge your brain to come at business and teamwork from a completely different perspective. For more information on MIT Executive Education, including details about Dr. Tara's six-week course, Neuroscience for Business, simply visit executive.mit.edu today. That's executive.mit.edu. An extraordinary first step toward reinventing yourself. Just another reason why Reinvent Yourself with Dr. Tara is proud to be supported by MIT. MIT, join us in building a better world. And now, back to the conversation.
So Chanel, when we were in the break, I was thinking about the fact that you were mentioning how ageless the Rolling Stones are. And
yes,
it brought up all sorts of things in my mind, like, is it because they're men and it doesn't matter as much? But then I remember you just said that you were the only person that's played Tina who's actually a mother. And
yes,
you had said to me previously that most of the girls that play Tina are in their 20s. Now, mm-hmm, I don't want to give away your age, but you're clearly ageless and youthful too. Tell me a bit about how that feels to be playing Tina, to have waited so long to have played her and be playing her at this age rather than the age of most of the other performers.
Yes. Well, I mean, to go back to my personal source, Tina Turner, she defied ageism, mm-hmm, sexism, racism, mm-hmm, and particularly in America, we have a serious obsession with, youth and all those things. And so to be an African-American woman in her 40s with two children, well, that's exactly where Tina was. So as I did the Tina musical, I was in the exact same age. I was 44. She was 44 around the time of What's Love Got to Do with It.
Mm-hmm.
She had, her two sons that she had to leave in Los Angeles to come to London to reinvent herself in rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
The racism. I can't say that I actually have ever been absolutely conscious of someone being racist towards me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know when assumptions are made about me, like a generalization. And that doesn't fly for me. So, but I think Tina Turner took a lot of the hit for that for women like me. But I will say, and this is a fact, I'm 45 years old and I feel more relevant now than I've ever felt in my entire career. And it has to do with knowing who I am. I remember desperately wanting to know, what do you need? What do you want? What can I do better? And that's part of your evolution, right?
Yeah.
It's just that where I've evolved to now, that is no longer a part of the conversations for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in a mode of seeking to be defined or for guidance in terms of who I am. And so what that does is it authenticate you. And age just doesn't exist anymore. You cut through the crap. You cut through. You just get in people's hearts because you're the truth. And the sooner you arrive to that, the better. Everybody wins when you are authentic and without compromise. And so, yeah, that's the real truth for me. I think about the performance that I gave in Milan and all the things that had to come together for that moment. I couldn't be up there and think, I'm too old for this. And there were people I knew personally that were like, how did she get this opportunity? I'm the one who, it should have been, me or something. But I'll tell you this, when I sang those notes, the fact that it was out of my range and the fact that I was a little bit hoarse, so because of the two times that I tried to sing it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was outdoors. So that also, I've been in a theater for a year.
Mm.
So now when you're singing outdoors, the wind, it's dry or it's moist. Like you don't know what the air is going to be.
It's different. Yeah.
It's different. So everything about that moment was so different. And I swear to you, I know my voice and I know how I sound. I know every tone and texture I've ever sang. Mm-hmm. But I sang in a way that I have never heard myself sing.
Wow.
Because of the stretch of hoarse, a slight hoarseness.
Yeah.
Out of my range, these two polar opposites happening. And I'm exposed to nature. I'm not in this controlled air environment. Mm-hmm. And the energy and the fire that wanted to spew out of me, all of that created one voice, one sound that I couldn't pretend or make that up. So it was a spiritual moment for me. Mm. And if you feel chills when I sing the song, that means I did my job. I completed the assignment because you felt I moved. Something was moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it was a spiritual experience for the receiver as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to go back to a statement that you made that just blew my mind. I mean, everything that you've just said is just so inspiring and motivating. But I think you said something that is so important, it's worth repeating, which is, I'm 45 and I feel more relevant than ever. I mean, for any person of color, person of any gender, because our societies are so ageist, that is such an important statement. And, you know, so I really wanted to repeat it. And I do think that opportunity is improving. You do see people, the theme of my podcast is about reinvention. You see people starting careers at later ages and making a big success of it. We know, for example, that if you read novels or go to the theater or to a musical, you know, rather than just reading work-related books, you do increase connections between the two halves of the brain. So creative pursuits interconnect the brain more. I'm just starting a hypothesis on whether that's, you know, contributing to the Rolling Stones and you.
Yes.
Other people I know in the creative industries.
Absolutely. So the first thing is, and something I said much earlier in our talk today, is I'm a firm believer in physically taking my body, placing it in an environment where to my left and to my right, the truth is there. There's an abundance of it. It's not a rare thing. Mm. It's normal. It's what I am. It's a reflection of me. And if I'm not in an environment that I don't see that, hear it, feel it, I'm in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I... being, you know, with the Rolling Stones that day, I mean, you look in their eyes and it's the same eyes. It's the same soul. It's the same fire. Now, this is I think the only time maybe a successful white male may feel minimized consistently is if he's whatever, like in his 70s or 80s, and he's being seen in a way that is not how he wants to be seen.
Yeah. Or how he feels. Inside.
Or how he feels inside, which is, for minorities or women, it's our constant, right? And I'm not minimizing anyone's experience. It sucks either way. Mm-hmm. No one wants to be perceived as something that they're not. And so, but it's being around them and just really, frankly, studying and researching legends. What legends do you know that doesn't quote unquote have an old soul? They understand culture and they know how to maintain their authenticity within the current culture. Mm-hmm. They don't lose themselves. And that is a powerful thing, a way to exist in the world. And, you know, as I did my research, I thought their name being Rolling Stones, the Rolling Stones. And I thought to myself, I said, this is not a noun. Rolling Stone is not a person, place, a thing. Rolling, it's not a person because they've had different members. It's not a place. They've been all around the world. Mm-hmm. It's not just this thing, whether it's a tour or an album or a documentary. It is a living, breathing organism. It's never going to stop. And that's why when you say things, you give yourself a title, a brand, you brand yourself, you say, this is who I am. When Brian, their original member, came up with the name Rolling Stones, which was taken from a song by Muddy Waters, a blues musician out of Chicago in America, they loved this old blues guy, and they loved this song and loved his music and named themselves after one of his songs. But sometimes we don't know why we do what we do, but that name, they're never going to stop. And when their bodies stop, their music won't.
No, exactly.
Their work will continue.
I mean, purpose. They've basically immortalized themselves already.
They have. They already have.
Maybe that contributes to the sort of not needing to or feeling defined by age, because they basically made themselves immortal already.
That's right.
Legacy.
Exactly. And we all have the opportunity to do exactly that with our work. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter your age, your race. It's hard for me to complain and be so upset about what happened to me when Tina Turner went from picking cotton with her grandparents on a plantation to being the queen of rock and roll.
Yeah.
So perspective is essential.
Yeah, and it's a message that I want to come out of this podcast series, not just your episode, which is that it's not too late for everyone. So there's still a lot of people that say, I'm too old now, or I don't have the luxury of, you know, manifesting. But yeah, you've given such great examples, and the neuroscience definitely says it's not too late for throughout your whole life, your brain can grow and flex and change.
I will say manifesting is far from a luxury. If anyone thinks of it that way, it's certainly not how I perceive it. It is an opportunity to change everything.
When people say, you know, you probably have to be fairly privileged to be able to partake in manifestation because some people are just trying to put food on the table, I always say, you know, if you did make some time for it, everyone's life could be at least a little bit better than it is. But what you're saying is it's an opportunity to change everything. Those were your words. But therefore, that it is so much even more important to make time to do it.
If Nelson Mandela for 27 years can sit in a prison and feel that all hope is gone, he is a man. He wasn't the man we know now. He was shut down and they tried to break him. Mm. 27 years is a very long time. Mm. And what was his mind? What were his neurons doing? What was going on in that beautiful mind that when that gate opened, that he went straight to the top? Yeah. It's supernatural. It is your escape. It is an opportunity. It's if you've never flown before, this is how you can fly.
Wow, Chanel, this is like, it's almost making me cry. And then when we cry, it means our nervous system has become fluid, because you've just said so boldly, like, what I really wish people would believe about how powerful they are because of their brains. And of course, it's intermingled with the quote that where you're describing about Nelson Mandela leaving prison and going to the top, which is that where he said, I knew that if I kept any bitterness or hatred in my mind, I would still be in prison.
It was love. It was his love for his people, his love for humanity. And there was so much love waiting for him. And that's the other thing. You have to think about what's waiting for you on the other side.
There's so
much waiting on the other side of these limited thoughts and limited ways of being.
Yeah.
But you have to take the leap and you have to do the work and embrace it, hold it close. Who cares if they say you look like a fool? Fine. I'm a fool. Whatever you, however you want to define me.
Yeah.
But on the other side of this, I am the best version of myself. And that's the gold. I want to be that. And you should want to be the best version of yourself that you can be.
Chanel, this conversation has been so personally inspiring for me. You know, I think sometimes, even though I'm a neuroscientist and I wrote The Source, we all need to be reminded, and you've done that so beautifully. Mm. I'm so excited to see what comes next for you. This was literally, it was an extraordinary discussion. I don't know like what I thought it was going to be, but it's just like expanded my mind so much. And I'm really humbled by how candid and forthright you are, and bold. I love that. If our listeners want to follow you, like, you know, keep tabs on your career, where's the best place to find you on social media?
Yes. I mean, at the moment, I'm on Instagram. It's just I am Chanel Haynes. Mm-hmm. I haven't decided yet to do anything outside of that in terms mm-hmm. of social media, because it can be overwhelming for me. But it's sort of my go-to place at the moment. Mm. But yeah. If there's any new surprises and information, it'll probably be there, because is the way that everybody can know what's going on all at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
I will definitely be, well, I mean, I was going to say keeping an eye on Instagram. Luckily, I don't have to, because I know you personally. Wonderful. Thank you so much again. This is just like so inspiring. That's all for this episode of Reinvent Yourself. Remember, no matter your mindset or stage of life, any brain, even your brain, can change. Even you can reinvent yourself. I'm Dr. Tara, and I'll see you next time.
If you have a question or comment for Dr. Tara, email or send an audio recording of your question to drtara@knox.studio. Dr. Tara's latest book, The Source, is available wherever books are sold. This has been Reinvent Yourself with Dr. Tara, a Knox Studios podcast. All rights 2022 Knox Studios. Produced by Mark Steele, Nadir Tavangar, Shahada Kari, and Jason Bashour. Written by Dr. Tara Swart-Bieber, Mark Steele, and Chanel Haynes. Engineered and sound designed by Knox Studios. Original music composed and produced by Sundry Souls.